Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Mr. Berry. This is Margaret Ling for the appellant, Joshua Calhoun. This case presents one issue, whether the district court reversibly erred when it applied a cross-reference under the guidelines and sentenced Mr. Calhoun under USSG Section 2A2.2, the guideline for aggravated assault. The answer to that question is yes, the district court did err because Mr. Calhoun's conduct did not constitute aggravated assault within the meaning of the guidelines. Moreover, because Mr. Calhoun received a higher sentence than he would have under the applicable guideline, this court should vacate the judgment and remand for resentencing.
Should have been 2A2.4, is that your argument?
That's our argument, Your Honor. He pleaded guilty to one count of high-speed flight from the checkpoint. It's a violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 758. And the guideline that's applicable to that offense is, as the Court noted, Section 2A2.4. That guideline does contain a cross-reference to the aggravated assault guideline, which is to be applied when the conduct constitutes aggravated assault. If you go to the aggravated assault guideline, which is 2A2.2, it defines aggravated assault as a felonious assault that involves a dangerous weapon with intent to cause bodily injury, not merely to frighten, b, serious bodily injury, or c, the intent to commit another felony. And in this case, the PSR found that the cross-reference was applicable under prong C, that Mr. Calhoun committed the assault with the intent to commit another felony, i.e., the high-speed flight from the checkpoint. We objected at the sentencing hearing. The agent testified, and there was also a DVD, a video of what occurred at the checkpoint that was put into evidence, and I believe the court should have received a copy of that. It was not put into the record, but I moved it into the record. And the court, after hearing that, did go with what the PSR found, did find that there was an assault in the context of the intent to commit another felony. And this was error for two reasons.
It is factually true, though, that he did commit the assault while he was in the process of committing the felony of fleeing from the station.
I think what the court is saying is that the events were contemporaneous. Is that correct?
Well, it's more than contemporaneous. He, in effect, dragged her her arm was bumped and so forth as his car was pulling away, and he was pulling away his car because he wanted to escape the station. I mean,
in other words, it didn't happen afterwards, after he had fled. I understand what the court is saying.
It wasn't unrelated. They were exactly part of the same event.
Oh, right. But the problem is, it's really twofold. First of all, if you look at the language of the guideline, it clearly seems to indicate that there has to be another felony. And we cited these cases that are, admittedly, those are not cross-reference cases, but they do indicate that there's got to be something separate if you're going to do the cross-reference. And here, they used the exact, it was sort of like a circular, almost like a double counting or something. It was the same felony. It wasn't anything different. But the other problem with it is, and this may go to what the court was suggesting, any assault, and we do dispute that there was assault, and that's my second point, was incidental to what actually occurred. The gist, the gravamen of the offense here was fleeing the checkpoint. And that's what certainly the Mills case that we cited in our brief certainly stands for that. I think the more fundamental problem here, though, is, as we indicated in our brief, is that the conduct does not constitute an assault within the meaning of the guidelines. And the guideline does not define assault. However, in construing this term under the federal statutes, this court and most of the other courts, as far as I can see, have used the common law definition of assault. And it's not in our brief, but I would cite the point to the court that this comes from United States versus Estrada Hernandez, which is at 150 F3rd 491, for the proposition that you go with the common law definition of assault. And under that common law definition, the government has to show either that the defendant attempted to commit a battery on the victim or that the defendant put the victim in reasonable apprehension of immediate bodily harm. And under this second prong, the intent to frighten assault, Professor Lefebvre, in his treatise on criminal law, has stated that it cannot be committed by negligently or even recklessly or illegally acting in such a way as with a car or a gun as to cause another to be in apprehension of being struck. In other words, it has to be an intentional desire to commit the assault. And this is also...
Let me ask you here. What this man did, touch her arm and try to move it.
He tried to get it out of his truck.
Yeah, that's right. And the statute, section 111 of the code, says that where such acts involve physical contact with the victim, he intentionally made physical contact with her arm with the intent to commit another felony. That's what the statute says.
Your Honor, I think that, first of all, he wasn't convicted under that statute. And it's kind of interesting that the court brings that up, because actually in my research, I don't know what would have happened under that, because in fact they did not allege physical contact under that statute, and it could not have been a felonious assault under this court's jurisprudence, the Williams
this
case.
This is a sentencing case, and the evidence undisputedly shows that he intentionally made physical contact with her.
That's correct.
With her arm, and he did it with the intent to commit another felony. That is to say, to allow him to continue and get away.
Your Honor, here's the issue, though. If he had been convicted, and even though that conduct occurred, if you look at Section 282.4, that also covers, the statutory provision for that is 18 U.S.C. Section 111.
That's what I'm saying.
If that had been, he still would have been under this statute. He still would have been under 282.4, not the aggravated assault statute, because there has to be an assault. And just because the federal assault statute says that, you still have to look at the definition of assault. In other words...
Well, that's the definition in the federal statute, seems to me like. I mean that's what says this. The offense is assault.
I understand what the court's saying, but had he been convicted under that, the proper guideline, in fact, would have been 2A2.4, because there would not have been the common law assault, so to speak, with the intent to commit another felony. And the guideline 2A2.4 specifically covers that situation. It includes section 111. And even the Supreme Court in FIOLA, which I think was a Section 111 case, said there has to be an intent to commit the assault.
But that statute has been amended, you know. See, this
one. But I don't think it went to that aspect of it, actually. It was.
I think the language with intent to commit another felony in 111 was added not at least maybe in 2008 or maybe in 2002, one of the two, I can't remember.
Be that as it may, Your Honor, even since the statute has been amended, this court has gone with that definition of that it has to be the common law assault. And if it's just simply brushing, the question here is, what is the proper guideline? And the guideline does, that guideline for impeding or obstructing does cover Section 111 in the circumstances where it's not a, quote, aggravated assault. And the testimony here, the agent at the hearing and the DVD, shows that Mr. Calhoun did not commit an assault within the meaning of the guideline. What happened was that he drives up to the checkpoint. He hands over his documents. They start looking around and checking his license plate. There's this red alert, which means there's some indication that he might be armed and dangerous. So Agent Sandoval comes out. He has turned off his truck. Agent Sandoval comes out, and she asks him to step out of his truck. At that point, Mr. Calhoun turns on the truck and starts to drive away. She puts her arm in there and attempts to turn off the ignition. He tries to push her arm away. He is intent on continuing to drive off. She was not dragged. She admitted she was not dragged. She admitted that she was simply tippy-toeing alongside beside him.
I don't think that's disputed. The PSR doesn't dispute it, does it?
Well, the PSR is the one that said it was dragged, and that's why the judge wanted to have a hearing on this. I think the court, again, I don't know how to put this, the court is having a problem with the fact that Section 111 requires touching, can be an assault with touching, but that statute covers more than just this, quote, aggravated assault. You can be convicted under that statute and not be sentenced under the aggravated assault statute. And
this commit another felony thing, you can get an 8. If you fall under that, that makes it a felonious assault. You can get up to 8 years.
You can maybe get up to 8 years, but that doesn't affect what the guideline is going to be. All right? And again, that was not actually alleged in the indictment here, so that wouldn't even have been the case, because it needed to be alleged in the indictment, because that's been held to be a separate offense, and that was not alleged in the indictment here. So that's really a side issue. The issue still remains whether he committed an assault. And the facts show that he didn't. I mean, at most, his conduct was reckless in driving off. He was not acting intentionally to frighten her or to threaten her. And the gist of this offense was trying to leave the checkpoint. Now, the government in its brief is now arguing that this was an aggravated assault under the first prong of that definition, that Mr. Calhoun used his car as a dangerous weapon with intent to cause bodily injury. The problem with this argument is that the district court never made any finding that that was the case. The whole argument, the whole basis for the cross-reference below was that he had done it in the context of committing another felony. In fact, the PSR specifically found that there was not sufficient evidence to suggest that Mr. Calhoun intended to injure or intended to commit bodily injury on the agent. That was a specific finding in the PSR, and the government never objected to that. So even under, I see my time is almost up, but even these cases that the government relies on are very different, where there's a direct attempt to injure somebody. So even if the court could rely on that, could go on that, which it can't, because that was not a factual finding, the court can't make that factual finding itself. That's not the case here. And in fact, as I said, the PSR specifically found that he did not have any intent to injure. The government never objected to that finding in the PSR. So, Your Honor, we would maintain.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
There was a hearing, so my first question was whether the officer testified she was dragged or not, or tiptoed, but more basically my question is this ultimately a fact-finding in terms of, you know, whether the vehicle was used as a dangerous weapon, et cetera? We know what the guidelines say, but I mean, ultimately, do we come down to a fact-finding, you know, made? And if that's the case, if that finding is plausible on the record, you know, what do we do with it?
Your Honor, it is a fact-finding. If you look at the Ortegon case, that's exactly what Ortegon, which the government cites in its brief, says. Whether Ortegon used his car as a dangerous weapon is a finding of fact we must review for clear error. But the problem here is the court never made that finding. There was no finding that was made. This is a court of appeals. The most that the court could do in this case would be to send it back for the court to make that, district court to make that finding in the first instance. But basically, the government's argument is a red herring, because that finding was not made below. The whole gravamen of the argument, and exactly what was argued, the government never objected to that that finding in the PSR, that he did not intend to cause bodily injury. They never filed an objection to it. They never cross-appealed on it. It's simply not before this court. Thank you, Your Honor. I'll save the rest of my time.
Yes, you've saved time for rebuttal, Ms. Lane. Thank you, Mr. Berry.
May it please the court, Ms. Ling, Richard Berry for the United States. Mr. Sandoval was indicted on two counts, assault under 18 U.S.C. 111 and high-speed flight from an immigration checkpoint under 758. He was allowed to plead guilty to count two, the 758 violation. The appropriate guideline for that is 2A2.4. The guideline contains a cross-reference stating in toto that if the conduct constituted aggravated assault, then the guideline to be used is 2A2.2. 2A2.2 defines aggravated assault in three alternate means. A felonious assault that involved A, a dangerous weapon with the intent to commit bodily injury, that is not merely to frighten with that weapon, B, serious bodily injury, C, an intent to commit another felony. A probation officer elected to proceed under C, intent to commit another felony, as indicated at paragraph 16 of the revised PSR. There was testimony at the sentencing hearing from Officer Sandoval, who was injured when she was trying to reach into Mr. Calhoun's truck and grab the keys and turn off the ignition switch. The district court specifically found a violation under subsection C. I would respectfully submit in the first instance, subsection B is out, serious bodily injury. The district court at page 235 of the record says, I am not finding serious bodily injury. However, the district court specifically did find bodily injury. I would respectfully submit that in the trial prosecutor's response to the PSR, she tried to suggest and did suggest that an alternate basis for finding for using 2A2.2 would be that Calhoun committed aggravated assault with a dangerous weapon, his truck, with the intent to commit bodily injury.
How could there be the intent to commit bodily injury? How is there any logic that he wished to inflict injury on this officer? All he wished to do was to get away. What difference did it make to him whether she was injured?
Well, as noted at pages 28 to 32 of my brief, as this court said in Ortegon and several other cases, the court can infer intent to commit bodily injury from the manner in which the vehicle was used. In this case, Officer Sandoval characterized the contact as, and this is at 218 of the record, it's actually from page 189 to page 218 of the record, but it's summarized on 218. Brushing, shoving, pushing, and struggling. She said that she reached into the window of the truck. She tried to grab the keys and turn off the ignition, and that she was dragged 30 to 40 feet beside the truck.
Now, when she testified at the hearing, did she say dragged?
Yes, sir, Your Honor. She said dragged repeatedly. And District Judge Crane asked her specifically, as did the defense attorney, as did the prosecutor at trial, what she meant by drag. And she explained that she was a tall person, and what she most likely meant was her right arm was inside the truck in a manner which made it difficult to extract, and she was able to run beside the truck for 30 or 40 feet. At some point, she realized she was not going to be able to get the keys, and she attempted to retrieve her collapsible baton from her belt so that she could strike Mr. Calhoun and make him stop the truck. She realized that was not going to happen because of the geometry of the truck window and the location of the baton on the belt, and she testified that there were a set of poles 3 to 4 feet away from the roadway on which Mr. Calhoun's truck was proceeding. And so she elected to let go of the truck because she realized, and pull her arm back out of the window, because she realized that it would take minimal effort on Calhoun's part to slam her into the poles.
I mean, all this is happening in a split second.
Yes, sir.
My split seconds. I mean, all very quickly.
Yes, sir.
Presumably, just a few seconds or minutes or whatever. And his primary interest is trying to get away. She's got her arm in, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. Intuitively, it just doesn't sound like ag assault to me. I mean, parsing all this language, it just, you know, seems like it's overlaying to get to ag assault. I mean, when indeed the guy's reckless, he's gross reckless, whatever, whatever. You know, it's there, you know, it's argued and all that, but it just doesn't seem to fit. Typically, when we're talking about aggravated assault, particularly in this split-second deal. But I guess more to the point is, you know, what exactly was the finding of the district court with respect? You heard the question I asked counsel, or opposite, I mean, you've got Artagon, we've read it, et cetera. Did the district court, you know, make such a finding here?
He did not make a finding with respect to using the vehicle. He did, and I'm at page 232. Here, this gentleman actually advances his vehicle, striking the agent in the shoulder arm area, and that's the difference. I feel certain, I feel comfortable that 2A2.2 is the appropriate guideline.
Is it, I mean, do you contend he found expressly or by necessary implication that the defendant was recklessly indifferent to the danger, to the physical danger that he exposed this woman?
No, sir, Your Honor, I don't. I would respectfully submit that the district court was focused on the third, the C prong of aggravated assault, and intent to commit another felony, which precisely as you noted, Judge Garwood, could be assault under 18 U.S.C. 111. It could be the state court offense of felony flight to avoid arrest, since Mr. Calhoun was undoubtedly aware that there were several state court warrants out for his arrest. It could be obstruction. It could be unlawful flight to avoid prosecution. There are any number of other felonies that come to mind. It's not an offensive conviction. It's a sentencing enhancement. So it could also have, of course, have been fleeing from the immigration checkpoint at high speed, as he was doing. At that point, the prosecutor tried to discuss the alternative finding, aggravated assault under the dangerous weapon with intent to commit bodily injury prong of 2A2.2, and she was cut off by the district court, if I may. Your Honor, if I may, we submitted a response to this, and we've offered the court, okay, well, I don't need any more argument. I've already ruled in your favor. Let's move on to another point. So, although in her written submission she had argued that Mr. Calhoun should be sentenced under 2A2.2 under either the dangerous weapon with intent to commit bodily injury prong or the intent to commit another felony prong, the district court pretermitted her argument in relation to the first and elected to proceed on the third. I would respectfully submit that there's an abundance of evidence to proceed on the third prong, intent to commit another felony. The only problem with my argument under prong A, the first prong, is the notation in the PSR in paragraph 17. In this case, it does not appear that there is sufficient evidence that the defendant intended to commit bodily injury. I would respectfully submit that that's what the trial prosecutor was trying to address with the district court when her argument was terminated by the district court, and I would submit that you can conclude on an alternate basis Mr. Calhoun's use of his truck constitutes an intent to commit bodily injury with a deadly weapon. In any event, I believe the district court was correct to proceed under the third prong, intent to commit another felony. There's abundant evidence of that. His use of...
Well, she doesn't really... Counsel opposite doesn't really dispute that, as I understand.
Well, I believe...
But she says that legally, in other words, she doesn't dispute that he was attempting to commit another felony. He was trying to escape, that is it. She says that's not another, though. She says it. All right, he was attempting to commit a felony, but not another felony. That's a... She,
There are any number of other felonies that come to mind. As I say, there's a state, there is a...
Well, why doesn't that get off into the speculative range? I mean, you know, sentencing is precise and you've got guidelines. I mean, why do we have to encounter the more speculative? There could be UFAP, there could be all these other things out there, any more than countenancing some subjective, fanciful notion on her part, you know, equally. I mean, the facts are not in dispute as to what occurred. It all occurs in a quick moment. Y'all say the DVD is there, et cetera. Just, you know, maybe technically it's there. The ag assault just seems like a reach to me in terms of really trying to make this, you know, fit. Maybe it will.
Well, I would respectfully submit that his act of flight is the other felony. It doesn't
it
have to be
the felony.
It is
it
the
is
felony.
It is the felony. The felony. He's trying to get away. So to say, to commit another felony suggests something other than the flight with the vehicle. He's intending to commit the felony, get away.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So to say commit another felony suggests get away plus.
Get away plus assault the officer. And I would submit that you can infer that from his use of the truck.
Well, that's why I said, I mean, at a point to me, it seems somewhat semantical in terms of making it fit. I'm not being disparaging with you. Just seeing, you know, when you get out to the range of sentencing ought to be particular to the defendant. You know, the facts are well there. This just seems to be kind of a, you know, playing widget with the guideline provisions, this subsection, da-da-da, in terms of that. But that's why I asked you, did she say she was drug or whatever? If this were a civil case, that dragging and all that sound like reckless conduct more so to me than an intent to injure the you know, the officer itself. But anyway.
I understand that, but he clearly intended to accelerate away. He was fully conscious of the fact that her arm was inside. And it's not just a matter of her arm being wedged in some manner between his body and the steering wheel. She repeatedly said she was trying to grab the keys and realized that she was not going to be able to, and so she's trying to strike him. And at the same time, he's pushing and shoving and trying to get her arm out of the truck, all of which is intentional.
What were her injuries?
She had bruising on her right arm. There was a photograph introduced at trial that Judge Crane said apparently a large bruise on her right arm. The district court determined that in and of itself would constitute bodily injury. He specifically found that she suffered bodily injury, but not serious bodily injury, which of course rule out the second prong of 2A2.2.
Well, he was guilty. It looks to me like of committing a felony under Section 111 that could have gotten him eight years.
He was, yes, sir, Your Honor. He was originally charged under both subsections.
Right.
If the court has no more questions.
Thank you, Mr. Berry.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Ling, you've saved time for rebuttal.
Your Honors, I think the court has understood at least the real crux of this case, which is that it's a stretch to call this an assault, and that's based purely on the facts. I'd like to read for you what the agent actually said happened. This is Judge Crane asks her, okay, maybe this is semantics, but I'm not sure exactly what you mean by, quote, dragged. Were you on your feet the whole time, alongside of the car, or were you off your feet and your feet just dragging on the ground? Agent Sandoval, well, I'm pretty tall, so I was basically tippy-toe. Court, you were tippy-toeing trying to run with the car again, and finally you just stepped back and let the car drive off? Uh-huh. Is that yes? Witness, yes. And the other thing to be aware of here is this was a 1993 diesel truck that Mr. Calhoun had actually turned off. And if you drive a diesel truck, and I have to admit here that I do, so I know, You cannot accelerate a diesel truck. It takes a long time to get it going, and the glow light has to come on, and then you have to, you just cannot accelerate. The other fact is that it showed that he had to actually make a sharp right 90-degree turn to get out of there. So the suggestion that he was somehow racing out of there is belied just by the configuration.
He was going as fast as he could go.
Right. Well, it was certainly no faster than she could run alongside him, which she did. And the crux of this case is, as Judge Stewart said, if this was a civil case, this would just be reckless. She was the one, he started to drive off, she was the one who put her arm in there. And she was the one who was able to voluntarily withdraw it. The fact that there were some poles coming up, that's again is a red herring, because she voluntarily withdrew her arm, and there's no indication that he was going to slam her into them.
I mean, that's true, but he's the one fleeing. I mean, we can't exactly make her the victim. I mean,
I'm not trying to make
assumption of the risk sticking your arm.
I'm not trying to make that argument. I understand what the court is saying. Nevertheless, she never testified. She said that she was scared. She never testified that she thought he was trying to hurt her. And this is in really stark contrast to the...
Well, when she says she's scared, though, what she was saying is, I mean, she was asked, or she said that, you know, all he would have to do would be to switch his car, move his car a little bit, and then the pole would knock me off. So when she's saying she's, and that's what she was scared of, so translated, she's scared he's going to do that.
But again, Your Honor, even if that's the case, her subjective belief is not what counts here. There has to be...
A reasonable belief.
Well, yes, but there has to be intentional conduct on his part that he's threatening to hurt her. It can't be just recklessly doing that. And, of course, there was a specific finding.
The statute says physical contact with her, and that was certainly intentional. He did intentionally try to push her arm out, and no question about that.
Your Honor,
while committing another felony, and he was then committing another felony.
The problem with what the court is saying is, I've looked at the statute, and I understand what the court is saying. First of all, he wouldn't have been convicted of that because there was no physical contact alleged in the indictment. And I would cite the court to this Williams case, where I think it was Judge Jones specifically said these are three offenses, and under Apprendi there's going to be a problem if you don't put physical contact in there. So I'm only speculating here, but it could be that that was dropped, that count was dropped, because it was only going to be a misdemeanor. Even aside from that, that's not really the issue here, because the fact of the matter is we're talking about a sentencing, and even under that Section 111, if you can be sentenced under 2A2.4 because it covers impeding or instructing an officer. And you have to look at the facts to see what the appropriate guideline would be. And the facts here do not support the assault, aggravated assault guideline. And that's just the fact that we come up against. And I know that Mr. Berry did concede that the district court never made a specific finding about using the car as a deadly weapon. The government never, ever objected to the PSR on that basis. They never objected to that paragraph in the PSR finding that there was insufficient evidence to indicate a specific intent to injure. I see my time is up, Your Honor.
Yes, thank you, Ms.
Thank
Bean.
You.
Your case is under submission, and the court will take a brief recess.